hear all about gigs this week on Techonomics, but what does that mean for the economy as a whole? Host Jason Middleton chats with financial expert Mark Hamrick of Bankrate.com to break down the impact of joining the gig economy and how job searches, gig searches, and salary information are all a click away. That conversation starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening to this week's themed show around gigging and the gig economy. In this segment, we have two sort of macro looks at the gig economy. How did gigging get to be so popular, if that's the right word? And what does it say about the state of work as a concept right now? And then we have a new online tool that may help giggers get better full-time jobs if that's what they want. And this Google tool also helps level the gender gap when it comes to salaries. Who knows, maybe as a society, we can actually get to that city on the hill, equal pay for equal work. First, we asked Mark Hamrick to join us. Mark is senior correspondent for Bankrate.com, and he's based in D.C. I start by asking him about who is gigging and why. You know, there's flexibility built in for the worker when it comes to gig economies, and that's great if that's what you want. If you have a work-life balance issue, this might help you, you know, solve that. But at the same time, you mentioned something there that I know Bankrate takes very seriously, and you guys write a lot of pieces on this, and that is planning for retirement. Is the gig economy conducive to planning for retirement? And if not, what's the workaround?
Well, no, the gig economy is not conducive to planning for retirement, just as if for the individual to be forced to shepherd that burden, it's not conducive to that either. Americans are sort of having to learn this real time. It's not to say that one can't be immensely successful as an entrepreneur, as one who sort of owns a number of different gigs in that gig economy, but it just becomes more problematic. And when your job security is more tenuous or less predictable, that makes it even tougher to plan financially, meaning, you know, we're just trying to get through the next rent or mortgage payment, much less try to figure out saving for retirement 20 or 30 years down the road. So, you know, as we looked at sort of the bigger picture, there have been some independent surveys that have said that the number of freelancers out there are somewhere in the realm of 50 million. But at the same time, you know, the U.S. Labor Department, as you know, comes out with monthly data sort of giving us an idea of what's going on in the workforce. And by its estimation, there are something like 27 million part-time workers in the U.S. 5 million workers consider themselves or define themselves as underemployed to the extent that they're working part-time, would like to have full-time work. So the percentage of part-time workers as a piece of the larger workforce is a little less than one-fifth. It's about 18% of the workforce. That's up sharply from, let's say, the late 60s when we were measuring that, but also down just a bit from the midst of financial crisis and recession when it was a full 20%. So I think as we see globalization continuing to be a big part of what's going on in the workforce, I think the gig economy is going to continue to play an important role.
An important role, but is it a sustainable role? I mean, we can't all just work gigs all the time. Nobody's going to have insurance. There's no insurance in this country.
Yeah, I mean, it is problematic. And, you know, I do travel a fair amount, and part of that travel either includes going with people who are driving in one of the ride-sharing situations. And so very often I'll be asked them what they're doing. Sometimes it's a retiree who just thought, you know, that person needed to get out of the house for a while. But, you know, more often it's somebody who is saving for, let's say, a home or a condo purchase. That was an interesting experience where somebody who had a PhD was driving one of these cars and wanted to buy a rather expensive condo, and so that was their solution. And there are very few people that I talk to who really love the fact that they're doing this. It seems like it's more of a situation where they're resigned to it, but that's not to say it's always the case. Some folks will say, well, you know, I love it because it allows me to go home to my country overseas where I can at least define the hours I work. But it's not so much as sort of living the life of a billionaire as it is sort of saying, well, you know, I'm going to work really hard for 10 months of the year so I can have a month or 6 weeks off. And, you know, that's not always optimal either.
You touched on my issue with the whole thing is that this points out to me, at least, that economic prospects are dwindling to the point where 33% of boomers are in the gig economy by my analysis. 40% of the cohort is now millennials. And that's a really high percentage of a really big demographic group. And that's probably going to get bigger. I guess what I'm saying is, sure, okay, it's great. You know, you don't want to work, you don't have to work. And that's totally awesome. But at the same time, what if you did? Where are those jobs? Where are those companies and those? Not everybody can work at Amazon.
No, but having said that, you know, there still is a tremendous opportunity in the United States, both for full-time and part-time work. One of the things that it sometimes requires, you know, I've seen this from my own experience as well as that of my 25-year-old son, is sometimes it requires moving from one location to the other, and that's really been sort of the history of the U.S. economy, if not the global economy as well. But the other part is that there is sort of an underclass that can't afford to move, and that, I think that's the biggest problem for policymakers as well as those local communities and even employers, is that, you know, maybe you have a shortage of workers, but the people who you would either like to employ, that you would like to train or have them as a prospective part of your workforce, simply can't get there. And I think that is a challenge. And it's probably, as you say, it's going to remain with us for some time.
I think you're right. The underclass is a great point, and I'm glad you made it, because if you want to be an Uber or a Lyft driver in the Bay Area, fine. You've got a market. If you want to be one in my hometown of St. Albans, West Virginia, that has 12,000 people in it, you better not have more than one Lyft driver, or you don't have any money or food on your table. You know what I mean?
No, I can completely identify. My parents were both from Appalachia as well, and my dad, whose own father died as a coal miner, has said, you know, people might like the opportunity to work for a coal mine, but that's not necessarily their first choice for a job.
Mark, you're a gem. We always appreciate your analysis. Thank you for your time this morning.
Good to talk to you, Jason. Thanks so much.
That was Mark Hamrick. Mark is senior correspondent for Bankrate.com, and he's based in D.C. Listening to that interview again, I sound kind of indignant, but I'm really just frustrated that people who want to work, who are capable of the job, simply cannot find those opportunities. And with that, let's turn to full-time gigs, jobs they call them, and a new Google tool.
Susan Kadrecha, and I'm a search communications manager.
Thank you for your time this morning. I want to talk about the Google adding salaries to the job search tool. What are the new tools?
Sure. So probably most notably is the salary information. So we saw that when people were evaluating a job posting, you know, a lot of times the feedback that people had, well, sure, like, but actually, what does it pay? And ironically, we saw that this information is actually missing from about 85% of job postings today in the U.S., which, you know, frankly, can lead to a lot of wasted time and effort on both the job seeker or perhaps the employer side as well. Because at the end of the day, if you get to the end of the road and say that, you know, a salary isn't necessarily what you were expecting to support you or your family, you know, that can be disappointing. And so that's why starting today, we're adding salary estimates and comparisons alongside job postings where available in Google Search. And so in order for us to calculate that, we actually worked with leaders in the industry like Glassdoor, PayScale, Paysa to actually add and specify a salary or a salary range based on that job posting. And then for those that actually don't necessarily disclose that salary, we are also adding salary estimates based on the specific job title, location, and employer. And this is drawn from sources across the web as well. You know, it is important to note that these aren't exact figures. And of course, every posting may be a little bit different, but we just hope that these base data points will give people at least an idea of what to expect.
I don't think you can confirm this in any way, but I have to draw a line between Glassdoor, which is in Sausalito, LinkedIn, which is in the South Bay, Google, which is in Mountain View, and of course, California's new law that bans salary history queries. And the whole point of that is to get to salary parity and equality. And the importance of this is coming in a couple of weeks, I think, but there's another feature that could be really useful for job seekers.
So actually coming in a couple of weeks is the ability to actually save your job search. So we're noticing that, you know, frankly, it takes a lot of time to find the job that's right for you. And so we realized that, you know, you might be looking on your phone and see something, you know, while you're out and about and maybe you want to apply for it later, or maybe you step away from your job search for a few days. But we're actually adding a bookmark function alongside every job posting, which is now a simple as tapping the button, and you'll actually save that job posting to a separate save tab. So now you could actually just re-enter the job feature, and actually you'll see that tab open up, and you can just revisit those postings whenever you like. And so that is going to be something that we're introducing in a couple of weeks, but we hope that will be another great tool as well.
Now, when you say rolling it out in a couple of weeks, that's a universal application, right? I don't have to wait because I'm on iOS or I'm searching on my iPhone. Everything's going to be just for everybody, right?
It will be available across the Google app on mobile as well as desktop.
Okay, great. Well,
this
good.
It's also all available on tablet as well.
All right. Thank you so much for your time this morning. This is very useful. I hope we can talk again soon.
Thank you.
That was Susan Kadrecha, a Google Search Communications Manager. There are lots of angles to this, way more than we can put in a one-hour show, of course. So we'll keep revisiting the gig economy as more stories come up. For a raft of links, please head over to kgoradio.com/techonomics and look for the story that goes with this week's show. We have specialized platforms for gigs, economic studies, Google's new salary tool, and all of our sourcing, really. It's all in that article. Techonomics is also reachable at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. And I am on Twitter at KGO Jason. The podcasts go up on the kgoradio.com page, as well as in Audio Boom and Stitcher. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, I'm the host and writer, Jason Middleton. Thanks so much for listening, and have great weeks, everybody.